Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We're particularly excited to be launching this podcast during the summer months, which celebrate both Disability Pride Month in July and SMA Awareness Month in August. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. I'm so excited about today's episode. Our conversation today is the first in a series of interviews addressing all the unique aspects of access to the world. Now let's get started. Welcome to my two guests today, Kevin Chandler and Luke Thompson of We Carry Kevin, a nonprofit organization with the mission to mobilize individuals with disabilities by redefining accessibility as a cooperative effort through investment, interaction, and innovation. They've also filmed two documentaries about their adventures traveling to Europe and China. And Kevin has written a book also titled We Carry Kevin. Y'all, I'm so excited to talk to you today. I'm fascinated by what you've done and by what you've created.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. So Kevin, why don't you kick us off and tell us just a little bit more about yourself, your disability, and how We Carry Kevin came about?
Yeah, my name's Kevin Chandler. I live in Fort Wayne, Indiana, grew up in North Carolina, and I have spinal muscular atrophy type 2, and my sister does as well. And we grew up in a home of just figuring things out and being creative with what we should do and what we wanted to do. And so over time, you know, growing up with that and kind of being part of my friendships as well, as I got older and moved out on my own and everything, having a really wonderful, brilliant, creative friends around me that kind of remained the theme of my life until my late 20s when I said to some of those friends, hey, what if we went to Europe? And we had done some previous kind of small adventures with a homemade backpack where they could carry me. We had explored some sewers and stuff like that. And so said, well, what if we did that for 3 weeks above ground in Europe? And one thing led to another, and we came up with a more professional backpack and headed out to Europe and got to see some really amazing things together. Got to dance in the streets of Paris and tromp through the woods and the open fields of England, and then hike up on the island in off the coast of Ireland called Skell of Michael. And yeah, some really amazing sights, but also some great experiences with dear friends. And so when we got back from that, we had a lot of people asking us, where'd you get these friends? Where'd you get this backpack? How did you make this adventure happen? And so we started the nonprofit We Carry Kevin, which was the name of our fundraiser campaign to go on the original trip, because we also are all poor. And so we couldn't afford a trip to Europe on our own. So we asked for help. And yeah, so now we have this nonprofit, and that is striving to redefine accessibility as a cooperative effort, as people helping people and caring for one another. We believe that that's where true accessibility happens, when people think outside the box because you care about someone.
No kidding.
It leads to much better innovation. So.
Yeah, and it sounds like that trip to Europe really gave you kind of the proof of concept probably that you needed to move forward with this as a nonprofit and a business operation.
Yeah, definitely. And then we got to, you know, to use your words, we got to prove it a little bit further with our trip to China 2 years later, and had a great experience there where it wasn't so much about like fulfilling one of Kevin's dreams, but it was about going and seeing other people and meeting people where they are.
Yeah.
We got to spend some time in some care centers for orphans with disabilities and got to hang out with those kids and brought them some backpacks for the staff to use with a few of the kiddos. And it was just a really cool experience all around.
Yeah. That's so great. That's so great. So Luke, let me bring you into the conversation. I've got so many questions for you guys, but tell me if you don't mind just, how you met Kevin, how this friendship developed, and tell me if you don't mind who gets true credit for the backpack idea? Who first had the idea?
Yeah. Take it all the way back. I think I've known Kevin for like 8 years. 8.5 years. I played in a band. Kevin was a fan of the band and knew some of the other people. And so he would come out to the shows and we just kind of started talking organically through that. And then after some time, I think Kevin had a book that he was self-publishing and he wanted to do a trailer to just kind of show what was going on. So we came up with an idea and filmed something in my backyard, just super casual. And we just, I think, found out from that we worked together really well. And we decided sort of after staying in touch for some time to take it to the next level and actually film something of a larger scale. And that's kind of how we got started with the whole process is kind of building from there. So yeah, it's been something we've developed over a long time. And for backpack, Kevin, you may need to help me with this one, but I would say Tom was sort of the instigator of that and many other things. But he seems to have the wild ideas that were like, can this actually happen? And I think his idea was to do something sort of less than ideal to carry you on his back that kind of developed into what it is now, right?
Yeah, it was his idea to go into the sewers and we were like, well, how do we do that with a wheelchair? And yeah, just through your conversation, he was like, what if we did some kind of backpack? And so that's how we ended up with that.
Kevin, did he come up to you and say, hey, the sewers are cool, you should come into the sewers? Or were you like, how did that actually happen?
Yeah, you might have to explain the sewers to me because what I'm picturing isn't very pretty.
Oh, it wasn't pretty at all.
No. And I'm actually curious, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was not pretty. It was awesome. But we were hanging out and Luke was part of this group that we were part of a potluck group, just a lot of starving artists that would get together once a week and make dinner together. And we did this at a bunch of different people's houses, and some of those houses were accessible and some weren't. And so I had gotten really used to being out of my wheelchair. They would sometimes take me out of my chair and just carry me up, 2-3 flights of stairs and then sit me on the couch or on the floor, and that would be how I'd spend the evening. And so we were actually driving to Luke. I think the band was recording somewhere up in the mountains. And so I hitched a ride with Tom and we were driving up there. And I said, I'm getting used to not being in my chair. It'd be really cool if we did like a weekend thing where I just left my wheelchair behind. And he was like, well, yeah, but we can't just like sit on the couch and play video games. We have to do something really awesome. And
seriously.
Adventurous and stuff. Yeah. And so he said, well, what about the sewers? And he had always wanted to do it and wanted me to go with him. And so that's kind of how that conversation started. And I mean, we grew up on Ninja Turtles and Batman, and the sewers seemed like a really good idea. So that's how we ended up there.
Okay. So there's nothing particularly special about these sewers. It was just some sewers in your city that you thought it would be fun to go explore?
Yeah. Yeah, that was basically it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to wrap my girl brain around this. It sounds like an adventure for sure.
Yeah. There's no like deep spiritual reason.
Is it one of those just do it? Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, what are the odds of you being able to do that too, in terms of like range of options? It's like, here's something that's like basically like the moon for you.
Yeah.
In terms of accessibility, it's like, let's see if this can happen. Yeah.
Very true. Very true. So tell me about like the travel that you did maybe prior to this. Did you travel much? I mean, obviously there were limitations and things before the backpack came along. So did you have much experience traveling or did you get to do much of that before?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing too with travel is like you build up to something, you don't just one day wake up and say, I'm going to go do this crazy thing. Mm-hmm. And I've never done anything like it. So growing up, my dad worked for the airlines, and we also have family all over the U.S. and Canada. And so we did a lot of family trips, whether it was road trips or flying. We did a lot of flying out to like California and Vancouver and areas like that. And so, yeah, and then we're originally from Florida, and so taking like road trips down there. And so I've traveled a lot in that regard. And then whenever I graduated high school, I was in a band and we did some touring, and I also had a college internship out in Arkansas. And so I did a lot of road trips with my friends when they started like doing caregiving for me and stuff. But this trip was the first time for a lot of things, which was, it was the first time I was flying without my parent. And so that was going to proved to be a little different. It was also the longest flight by quite a bit, kind of exponentially. And then also the first time I had done a trip without my wheelchair, because we left the wheelchair home for the whole trip.
Right.
And just took the backpack. And so kind of those aspects of it were new. But yeah, I had traveled a lot growing up, and it just always involved a lot of either planning ahead or just, you know, thinking on your feet when you got there and saying, all right, this will work and this won't, and how do we do this differently? And just really, I'm thankful for having a lot of friends who could think creatively with me, you know, so I wasn't just leaving it up to them, but we would come up with ideas together and solve problems together.
That's really great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to talk about just the backpack for a second, because, you know, I also have spinal muscular atrophy, and I've envisioned trying to get into one of these backpacks myself. And, you know, I've got some tricky joints and my bone density is not great. So tell me a little bit about how you designed the backpack so that, you know, the pressure maybe was on the right places and you didn't, you know, injure or, you know, cause discomfort to sensitive areas, those sorts of things.
Yeah, that's a great question. We started with an existing product. So this was a backpack that was designed for children of sort of like average body type. And with that, we were able to sort of break it down and adjust things that needed to be adjusted in particular. So a lot of it was the seat of the backpack, and some of the padding, and some of the, I had to kind of bolster that a little bit. Adjustability was the big thing.
Yeah.
Just allowing for, you know, different movement, different placement of things. Actually, in the view from here, which is the documentary we ended up making about the trip to Europe, we actually have a short scene in there where Tom breaks down the backpack that we used to go to Europe. So he actually goes through a lot of the different adjustments that were made. You kind of see the before and after of that, which is pretty cool. Those were two of the main things there. And then actually there's a production version that's available now that we have sort of taken to the next level in terms of some of the safety features and some more flexibility for people, not just Kevin, right? So like people who do have like unique needs as well. So yeah, it's kind of taken on its own life from there.
Okay. It's mind blowing to think of this. Is there like a weight limit or?
Yeah, that's really the only major limitation on the backpack is it's a 70-pound weight limit, which doesn't sound like much until you realize someone's going to have it on their back. And so you're like, okay, that's fair. But
yeah. And there would have to be a limitation on that because like you said, it's on someone's back. There couldn't be an unlimited amount of weight a person could carry.
Yeah. And that was a big breakthrough for us because most like child carriers, the limit is 40 or 50 pounds.
Okay.
So we worked with the company to actually reinforce the frame so that it is stronger and reinforce the string in order to meet the criteria to say it can hold this much. So yeah, that was a big thing. And then as Luke said, the seat was another major change that we made, which was in order to, as you suggested, like distribute the weight more appropriately for an adult or anyone that's not a toddler, really. But yeah, so the design that we have now puts the weight on the back of your legs and kind of your tailbone. So
I see.
It gives you more points of contact And then, yeah, we really wanted it to be a thing that people could pull out of the box and say, we need this part, we don't need this part, we need to adjust this part, and just not have to reinvent something or make a lot of major alterations themselves. They can just move this strap or buckle on, and it's better.
Yeah, I think that support is probably the key word that differentiates this. Adjustability and support. Because, in terms of like muscle ability and kind of, like you said, bone density, there's just going to there's a need for more of that kind of supportive structural
Absolutely. Existence. I absolutely love, I have to say, like, my brain is spinning right now because the level to which you saw a problem and, you know, just sort of bit by bit solved the problem. I think that it's absolutely amazing. And I think it's a testament to, like you were saying earlier, what people can do if they put their minds to it and get creative.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the two documentaries that you filmed. You filmed your first one in Europe and the second one in China. So let's start with Europe. I know this was kind of your inaugural trip, so to speak, with the backpack. Tell me what went well and maybe what didn't go as well and what you learned.
Oh, yeah.
We learned a lot.
We had to make this up completely as we went along.
I'm sure.
It was one step at a time. It was like, all right, let's figure out what the budget needs to be, you know, just to make this happen. Let's raise some money. Let's do GoFundMe. Let's create social media. So like the documentary was sort of like the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. There was so much underneath the water that went into making this thing float and making it really happen.
Did you go into the trip knowing that you were going to film a documentary, or did that come later?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was our third sentence that we talked about.
Okay.
When I had the idea of going to Europe, I reached out to Tom because I knew I wouldn't go without him. I reached out to another friend who is a pretty busy traveler and just, he knows the financial and the personal costs of doing something like this. And so I wanted to get his approval, really. And then I reached out to Luke and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Do you think it's a good idea? And if it is, we're going to need proof that we did it. So can you come and film and make a documentary? Yeah, that's kind of where that came from.
Love it. So tell me about some of the places that you went, and did you still have, you know, surprises along the way? I can't imagine that you wouldn't.
Yeah, I would say we had surprises around every corner, you know, because each place that we went, sure, we were moving past the typical sense of accessibility. You know, we didn't have to worry about whether there were stairs or not, but we still had to keep in mind, and this goes back to your other question about things we learned. You know, we had four guys, taking turns carrying me and doing caregiving and everything. And even with four guys, that ends up being a lot of work. And so figuring out our boundaries of, okay, no, we need to rest, or this hike or this process takes a normal person about an hour, it's probably going to take us two, you know, that kind of thing. So I think we were on top of the world. We were overcoming a lot of obstacles that no one else had ever overcome, or not many people had overcome. And yet at the same time, we were coming face to face with our weakness and mortality every day, just by getting worn out and getting tired. And so, yeah, that's something that we learned and had to figure out.
Yeah, I think it was like a reality check in every sense. Yeah. It was like, here's what we can do. Here's physically what's capable beyond what we think is possible. But here are also the limitations that we're going to have to deal with either way. So it's a reality of both of those things.
Right. Give me just a handful of examples, some of the places in Europe that you were able to go that maybe you couldn't have if you'd been there in your wheelchair.
Yeah. One of my favorites to look back on is one day in England. The family that we were staying with, the husband said, I want to take you out for a walk. And we thought it'd just be like an hour or so, but it ended up being like a 6-mile hike through the countryside. And so we're walking through fields where cows are, you know, resting and eating. And we went through the woods. We were literally like climbing over fences with me on these guys' backs. And just every sense of that was was not wheelchair accessible, who's not wheelchair friendly. And yeah. and yet at the same time, like, you don't want it to be, you know, because it's also natural and grown up on its own, just, you know, it's just the world. And so you don't want a paved path through these, like, super old forest that who knows who's walked through there in history. And you want to feel the crunch of leaves under your feet and have to step over roots and look up and see the sun streaking through the trees. And yeah, so another would be the island that we went to at the end, Selig Michael, which has a monastery at the top. It's kind of a jagged mountain with a little collection of huts at the top where monks gathered. They've been chased out of the country, and they gathered there to pray for their homeland, which you can see. It's about 7 miles away from the coast, and on a clear day, you can see Ireland. And so, you know, with a setup like that and that kind of history and legacy, you don't really want them to install an elevator, you know?
Yeah.
You want to feel the struggle that they felt to climb up these stairs and rocks and everything. Yeah, so those were the sort of things that we wanted to experience firsthand, and we realized, well, they may not be wheelchair accessible, but they are, they can be accessible. Like, they were allowed to go there. So we just have to figure out how to do that. That's what we did.
That's amazing. Luke, did you have kind of a favorite moment from the Europe trip where you just, you know, where you saw the proof of what you all were trying to do and got to live the success of it?
Definitely, it would have to be Selig Michael for me. I know Kevin just spoke on that a little bit, but just to add to it, I mean, it really felt like a different world. It's a super unusual landscape. It's a, back to the iceberg analogy, it's basically that. It's a mountain on the ocean floor that's so tall that it sticks up above the surface. So you're at actually the peak of this really, really major mountain that's underneath the water. And so at the top, it's just, you get a very different sense of the world for sure. So just being there and being in a place that, if I'm correct, and Kevin, you may need to correct me on this, I believe that you were the first person with a disability, with a physical disability, to be or to access that spot, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I would say the first person in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's not for the faint of heart.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. So how long ago was the Europe trip and how long were you there?
Yeah, so that was 2016 and we were there for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And then, yeah, we went to China in 2018 and that was also 3 weeks.
Gotcha. I think the other question before we move on to China that I want to ask was, you know, just the leap of faith that you took to go to Europe, knowing you were going to be there for 3 weeks and leaving your wheelchair behind, what kind of emotion or fear did you have to work through to just knowing that that was what was happening?
Yeah, we had to design the seat and everything for the backpack. We had been doing a lot of test runs with that. And so I'd gotten really used to leaving my wheelchair behind and using the backpack for a couple hours here and there and just living in the backpack. And so when we left it at the airport hotel and headed for the airport and everything, I honestly didn't really think about it. I just kind of, we were just on our way. That's what we were doing. And it didn't set in until almost maybe a little over a week into the trip. And what hit me was that we spent a day in London. And London, for the most part, I mean, it's a big city. And so there are a lot of accessible aspects of it, you know, like the sidewalks and the ramps and elevators and everything are there. And so I kept looking around going, man, if I had my chair, I could just wander up and do my own thing this way and that way. And that's when it really hit me of like, oh, I've not traded my chair for something better. It's just another way of getting around. I've traded one form of accessibility for another form.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that was really cool.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to move on and talk about China, because I actually have been to China in a wheelchair, and it is not a wheelchair accessible country. You know, it's thousands of years old. The buildings, the structures, everything that's there is so much older than the country that we live in. And, you know, the ADA doesn't exist over there, and it's just a completely different experience. So tell me a little bit about, tell me how you chose China. And again, what went well, what you learned, what didn't go maybe as well as expected, if anything?
Yeah. So near the end of our Europe trip, we were talking about where we would want to go next and what we would like to do next. And one of the guys on the trip, Ben, he had gone with his brother and sister-in-law to China because they had adopted two children from there. And so he got to see kind of firsthand the different way that they view disabilities versus how we might. And so he had suggested maybe that would be a good next step, because what we found in Europe was that we didn't have to use words. We didn't have to describe what we were doing. If people saw us and then on the street, they could kind of figure out for the most part what we were doing, and they understood our message. And so that's what we had started asking ourselves, is where could we go where language is a barrier and, you know, culture is a barrier, and yet the message could come through just by us walking through town, you know, and letting people see us. And so that was his suggestion. And the further in we got, we made some great connections with the care centers there, and they invited us to come and visit. And so, yeah, one thing led to another, and that's how we ended up there. And it was an amazing trip because we also got to experience, you know, for the first week, we were kind of in the countryside, which is sort of one culture. And then the second week, we were in this kind of older city, and that was its own culture. And then the last week, we were in Beijing, which is very new and clean and kind of westernized in some ways.
Yeah.
And so that was its own culture. And so I feel like we got to experience all these different kinds of China, rather than just showing up in one town and saying, oh, this is what the whole country is like. We got to really get a wide swath of the experience.
And did any of you speak Mandarin?
So we actually took a translator with us.
Oh, okay. Very smart.
Yeah, a friend of ours. Yeah, he was a 16-year-old who had been born there, and his family lives in Vancouver now, and we knew them through my family. And he, I think they left when he was like 10 or so, 8 or 10.
Huh?
Yeah, so he was fluent and just came with us, and he was a trooper. He was great. So I felt sorry for him when we would have dinner with a bunch of people and he would have to translate like 5 conversations at once. And I don't know if he signed up for all that, but
sounds like a good person.
Yeah, he was great.
And how long did you say you were in China for? 3 weeks also?
Yeah, that's something that we've learned, is we feel like that's a good marker where we've had a full experience, but everyone's kind of, by the end of that, they're ready to get home and take a nap and have a rest.
And I was looking at your website earlier, and there's a picture. I mean, you've got lots of great pictures on your website, but there's one in particular where you're climbing the Great Wall, it's all but straight up and down. And it just, I think that picture said everything that probably needs to be said. You know, it was an absolutely incredible picture, and it really captured the power of what y'all were doing.
Yeah, and I really loved that part of the trip. Was I think it was really no pun intended, but a real pinnacle moment as far as the holistic message and story of what we're doing, which is, you know, these guys are carrying me, but I'm also encouraging them, and they're also supporting one another. You know, there's pictures of someone carrying me, but someone else is like giving them a hand to help them over something, you know, and we definitely can't do it alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, incredible. What was your favorite part of the trip to China?
Oh man, I would say the time at the care centers with the kids, you know, just getting to roll around on the floor with them and play with them, and getting to see, we got to try out the backpack with a couple of them and see what that experience is like for them to be high up and to be playing with their caregivers in a whole new way, a whole new capacity. And it was fun. They would chase each other around and stuff. And so yeah, it was a special experience, because it was what we wanted. We wanted it to not be about me. We wanted it to be about others, and that was kind of the ultimate expression of that.
Right. Yeah. That's beautiful. Luke, how was the trip to China? Obviously, you know, the focus was different, like Kevin just said, but apart from that, how was the trip to China different for you than the trip to Europe?
I felt way more prepared this time, for sure. The China documentary, that whole experience, plus things that happened since then, got me kind of in the right mindset for it. So I went into it with a little more confidence. And then also, just seeing the next phase and the kind of like the future start to manifest itself too. Like Kevin said, like being able to see it expand and really make an impact in other people's lives in a way that when we really first started, we had no concept of that. Like we knew that that would be awesome if that happened, but there was so much that had to go into place just to get kind of things off the ground that it was such a distant thought that at this point it became a reality, and it really set the groundwork for where we're at now, which really is just an incredible thing that's happening now.
Yeah, it's so incredible. It's absolutely wonderful. But I want to ask you, I mean, you guys are probably the ultimate travelers at this point. If someone doesn't have a backpack, what suggestions or advice would you have for wheelchair users when traveling to make their trips as successful as possible?
I would say, kind of referenced this earlier, but I'd say there's three things. One is to do some research, kind of know where you're going and what you're getting into, so that you can plan accordingly. I would also say when you get there, you know, approach it with an open hand. So you may have done a lot of research, but you may get there and it's entirely different. And so you need to be willing to roll with that and bend with that. And then thirdly, take people with you who can also do both of those things. So to take people with you who are going to think through things, but also are willing to kind of roll with it and figure things out on the fly. Yeah, I would say those are the basic pieces of advice. You know, and then there's a lot of like practical small things. Like if you're flying with a power wheelchair, take your joystick off and take that with you, and you know, stuff like that. And, you know, when you're looking into hotels, figure out what you're going to need and make sure that they have all that in place already. If you can pare down your personal needs, you know, like you don't need to take your medical grade bed with you, then don't, you know, that kind of thing. And just kind of pare that down and simplify your needs for the experience.
That's good advice.
In order to make it easier. Yeah.
Great.
And I think the only thing I'll add to that is just like communicate as much as possible or as much as you're comfortable with in terms of those specifics, because you never know who might be able to help or what options might be available to you without asking. So that's one thing I'll say.
Very true. That's a great point as well. So where and how can people watch your documentaries? Because now I know that the Europe one was a couple of years ago. If I'm not mistaken, I think this upcoming weekend you're premiering the documentary from China. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. And I think that this episode, unfortunately, is going to air after that. So are there places where people can find the documentaries or see, you know, snippets of them, pieces of them anywhere?
Yeah. So currently we're working on sort of future screenings as well. These are kind of the first round of those that we're testing some things out and kind of refining that process. So once we get that happening, it'll happen probably more frequently. The China series has been kind of shown in different places on social media. There was a short kind of like micro news channel that put together a video of us recently, a couple weeks ago, that actually used a lot of this footage in kind of a different context. But if you wanted to see like a 3.5 minute kind of overview of both, you can look that up. And that's something we've linked on our Facebook profile, for example.
Great.
Yeah. And then the China series or the China documentary is being premiered, but we also did a series of kind of mini episodes that are on our YouTube, I think maybe our Facebook page.
So
you can get a lot of the story there.
Okay, great. And I'm going to put in the show notes, we're going to make sure that the links to all of those social media spots are included so people can go and watch the videos, because I am sure that a lot of people are trying to picture this and visualize it and are definitely going to want to go check it out. So what's next for We Carry Kevin? What are you guys working on now?
Yeah, so we actually just got back a couple of weeks ago from a trip that we call the family tour. And we made the backpacks available about 2 years ago. We started selling and distributing them. People can apply for a scholarship online and receive a free backpack or a partially paid for backpack. And people can give donations or even just purchase it outright. And so we started that about 2 years ago, this month actually. And we have over 500 backpacks around the country, or around the world.
Wow.
In several countries. And so what we're doing now is this family tour where we find pockets of those families who have the backpack and we go and visit them. So for example, we just got back from Colorado, where we spent about a week just hanging out with, I think, 7 different families who have the backpack. And we did a group hike with a few of them through Red Rock Canyon open space, and then also just spent time in the park or in their living room or their backyard or wherever they wanted to spend time. And yeah, that time is really, there's no agenda beyond encouraging them and, you know, hoping that they feel seen and known and loved, because we're taking these trips just to see them and know them and love them. And that's kind of our adventure right now, is doing one of those family tours and spending time with these families and quality time and getting to know them on a personal level.
Just to throw a statistic out there, give some context to it, we have backpacks in 43 different countries.
Wow, that's incredible.
So there's a lot of potential there when it comes to sort of making these connections. And at this point, we're just keeping a real open mind to all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, you guys are kind of the ultimate problem solvers in my mind. And you know, just the world of possibilities and opportunity that you're opening up to people, I think is incredible. And the way that you're opening people's eyes to what can be done, I think is incredible. So I really commend you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we are about out of time. I could talk to you guys forever, but I just want to thank you for spending the time that you have with me today and sharing your story and just this incredible journey that you guys have been on. I really appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content, and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.